So welcome to the final session, which is really kind of just a bigger integration session. We'll have some time for questions and answers and so forth. There's really kind of three pieces. So the first piece is, how do we integrate back into the world, right? And to some degree, people always want to ask, well, how do I integrate what I've done here, what I've learned here, and the kind of way that we live here into the rest of your life? And in many ways, you can't. This is a training experience. This is a very unique experience. This is really living as if we were in a monastery for 4 days. It's very much same schedule, same flow, same structure. It's very modeled after a monastic environment. And so we don't live in a monastic environment. So there is an element of realizing the value of these retreats, and if that's what you kind of get a sense of, that the best thing to do is to schedule another one at some point in the future, because this cannot be recreated. It just can't. But there are some certain things we can bring back. So just kind of as you move back into the world, there's some things to be wary of. Is try to do it slowly. You know, don't click on your phone and check every text and every email. Like, kind of get back into the digital world a little bit more slowly. Because you will notice, as I told you the story about the burn off of the equanimity, you will watch on the way home today, you will watch your samadhi and your nibbana and all your cash and prizes evaporate into nothing. And that's just how, I mean, I wish I could tell you otherwise, but that's most likely what's going to happen. See ya. That was cool. It's just, you know, it wears off. You know, the effect does wear off. So be slow about it, you know, get back into you if you can. Get back into your digital world slowly. Get back into your work world slowly if you can. Get some sleep. Don't drink a 32-ounce Frappuccino. You know, kind of just take it a little bit easy. Try not to squander. Try to, you know, as much as it will burn off, don't contribute to the burn off. Right? You know, driving might feel weird. I remember being on a long retreat and going to get gas after the retreat, and this is in Joshua Tree, and I was like, in the convenience store. And I was like, oh, wow, like, Brad and Jen broke up. Wow. Like, looking at the magazines, just like, you know, people be like, can I help you? I'm like, you know, you are all very weird right now, even though you don't feel it. Like, if I were to drop one of you into a mall right now, you probably would freak out. So you don't really realize it now, how much concentration you have and how sensitive you have become. You don't feel it now because we all kind of have it and we're out in the middle of nowhere. You know, but as soon as you get out into the world, that which is really out there, you might notice, you feel, if anybody has any drug experiences in their history, it's kind of like coming off of acid. You know, it's a little bit psychedelic. And so just notice that there's going to be probably a little bit of weirdness. You might be a little bit more sensitive than usual. So be careful about news intake, media intake, what's going on in the world. So just protect your senses, as we have been for the last couple of days. And at some point, you're going to have to re-enter, but don't just think about it as a volume knob that you want to slowly turn up, not a switch that you want to turn on. People. Not everybody is going to be thrilled to hear about your experience on the retreat. And I realized I was walking in the woods, and I realized in that moment I really did love myself. And the whole universe opened up, and I felt connected to everything and everybody. Right? That, you know, some people in your life might be interested in that story, but some people might be like, cool, man. You know, what we're doing here is, let's be honest, is a little bit weird. And, you know, so you want to actually be a little bit private and a little protective about your Dharma experience, because it's more likely that somebody will talk you out of it than you'll talk them into it. Mm-hmm. And then that doubt kicks in. You're like, yeah, maybe it wasn't that great, actually. There was a lot of pain in my body. The talk seemed good, but now that I'm listening to it, I don't know what the hell that guy's talking about. And then you'll get that. And that doubt is very destructive. So we really do want to protect in a big way. And I think there's an element of privacy. It's like you want to be protective and careful about who you share and who you talk to about these practices, because not everybody mostly people aren't going to be either be interested or be very impressed. Some might. You have a sense of who these people are and who they're not. Right? So just be careful about that. You know, like the waitress at the restaurant that you might stop. She's probably not going to be that interested. And so the other thing that you can do is recollect, like if you are a writer or a journal person, can be really good as soon as you can to capture on paper, to write about your experience, to journal about your experience, to just kind of get down and have some process around that. There's different ways to do that, writing, journaling, sitting, artwork, whatever it is that you do. Any questions about that, about just kind of integrating back into the world and how to navigate that so it's more easeful? Any concerns or questions you have? So what can we take back? So a conversation, I'll offer some suggestions around practice. So you're not going to practice 7.5 hours a day when you get back. And you're probably already thinking to yourself, and I know that I set the bar high at the end of the retreat. I'm like, I'm going to get up every day early and sit for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to do that. So, you know, and this is kind of the pros and cons of the world we live in, is there's lots of podcasts, there's lots of Dharma talks, there's lots of Dharma books, there's lots of data out there available to us. And one thing you'll notice, if you haven't already, as you consume various Dharma resources, there's lots of contradiction about practice and theory and so on and so forth. In fact, to be honest with you, people have been arguing about Buddhism and the Buddhist Dharma for 2,500 years. And fortunately, it's generally a pretty friendly argument. You know, no group of Buddhists have killed another group of Buddhists because they didn't see the Dharma clearly. So there's been so in many ways, the Dharma is preserved in kind of a little bit of a conflict and in an analysis and a critical dialogue. And this has really been going on for a long time. You know, so there's various, I mean, there's teachers that I sit with, that I practice with, that I study with, that I very much revere, and I listen to their talks and I trust their teachings. And some of these people, we disagree on some very, very basic stuff. Right? But it's not so much conflict. It's like, okay, I don't see it that way. Right? So there's not, again, this whole idea of right. There's not really a correct or right view on the practice. There's the view and the perspective that works for you, and to trust that what works for you is good enough. Because there's lots of, you know, this, once you start getting into the teachings and the theories and the practices and some of the stuff I've discussed, it's kind of an endless rabbit hole. Right? So again, if we have an academic or kind of an education-based, and some of you probably do, an intellectual interest in some of the stuff, we have to be careful how we approach that. You know, we're not trying to figure anything out or solve anything. So really, the Dharma teachings, books, podcasts, teachers, things, is really meant to be in dialogue. So very, very much it was recorded in oral history. So the spirit of it all is to keep the conversation going. We just want to keep that conversation going. So when I approach the text and I approach the Dharma and these teachings, I think about it as an interesting conversation in which there's no necessarily need for resolution or agreement, or we're never done. You know, I listened to Dharma talks I gave 2 or 3 years ago, and I'm like, I can't believe I said that shit. And I think that that's healthy. I think if people are delivering the same message for 10, 20, 30 years, that we should be changing. Our perspectives should be changing. And yours will too. So the sort of my opinion or dosage, I think if you were to sit, I think one bar to set for yourself, if you were to sit, say, 5 days a week for 30 minutes at a time, you could consider that a very healthy, very ambitious, very solid Dharma practice. And I would say that probably everybody here could probably do that. Look at your screen time and tell me you can't do that. Right? And so the reason I usually would say every day, but really every day is 5 days a week. The only thing I do every day is go to the bathroom, brush my teeth, and drink coffee. Everything else kind of has a varying degree of. So we can have the intention for every day, but I think five, you know, that's two, so 2.5 to 3 hours a week, I think is a very healthy, you can feel good about, like, yes, I have a meditation practice, I have a Dharma practice, and I'm sitting in this way. And if you're not there yet, that's okay. So maybe it's 20 minutes 3 days a week. Maybe it is what it is. But it's good for you to have that kind of stake in the ground of, like, I'm working up towards this, right? Because if you get into this really thing that people get into that's very sloppy, we're like, well, I'll sit when I feel like it, you just won't sit. Right? So having a calendar, having a schedule, having that, and then the more you do that, the easier it becomes. Now, what to do when you sit is a whole other question. So if you find that you're on your own, it's hard, then you can use guided meditation practices. There's plenty out there. But I would say don't use it. Don't do guided meditation practices more than half the time. And what kind of practices there are, really, I said this before, but really to reiterate it, if we want to have a repertoire of practices, which we do, then we have three kind of basic kind of categories of practice. There's concentration practice, focusing attention, bringing attention on the breath and body, notice the mind wander, and just coming back. That will build collectedness. That will build attention. That's a good practice to have. It shouldn't be the only one that you do. So there's mindfulness of concentration. Then there's mindfulness practice, which is more what we've been doing here. I haven't really taught much concentration practice. The open awareness practice, in which there's many kinds, but just kind of what we've done here, this opening to sound, opening to the body, opening to things that are of a somatic experience that are present now. You can train in those. And then also there's the heart practices. So maybe Monday you do 30 minutes of mindfulness of breathing, then you do some metta, and then you do some open awareness, and then you do some mindfulness of breathing, and then you do some gratitude. You want to get, because what these meditation practices are, the way to think about them is they're languages that you want to learn how to speak. So when you sit down and do a compassion practice for yourself, your body starts to know, you get a sense of the flavor of that. And you want to just kind of rotate them in a healthy way. You shouldn't be doing the same practice all the time, every day. I meet people often who are like, I've been doing mindfulness of breathing for 25 years, and I feel like I'm not getting anywhere. Okay, that sounds right. Right. And so there's a lot of different things out there. I would just say I think it's good to avoid the kind of general, like the head spaces and kind of these just meditation for meditation, because those people have no training at all. They just kind of make shit up and say, do this and do that. So there's a lot of secular practices that, and this is just like, of course, I have a bias and I have opinion, but if you're going to trust anybody, I think we can trust the Buddhists when it comes to meditation. They have been doing it for 2,500 years. You know, I wouldn't trust the Eckhart Tolle, so I have nothing against him, but he doesn't have a practice. He just wrote a book about being in the present moment. So it's his opinion. There's no weight, there's no depth, there's no tradition. Right. There's no scientific method. So the Buddhists do have a scientific method where they've been watching this thing for long enough that they kind of figured it out. They're like, this is some stuff to do. So I would say that those are usually probably more trustworthy. And then you'll find your way with that. Any questions on daily practice, sitting practice, so on and so forth? Yeah, please. And then you. Yeah.
Would they be available?
Yeah, I'll get. Yes, they will be. I'll get to that. Okay. I'll definitely talk about that. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, you and then Amita.
Here, very easy to slip into this space. Home, the monkey mind is like, I've got 12 and a half minutes until da da da, and I've got something happening coming up, and something happened just a minute ago.
That's right. You're not going to recreate the experience here at your house. You're just not. Don't try. You'll be frustrated. It's just not possible. Like, I'd love to just say, tell you how to do it, but I've been able to do it. You know, I sit at home upstairs. I got two screaming kids downstairs, a barking dog, 57,000 emails to return. Here, I ain't got shit. It's easy. There's nothing to do here. You might as well just practice. So don't think that you can, and maybe you'll slip into it. I'm not saying you won't, but be careful of that kind of, like, you know, again, it's just clinging to the past. I had this beautiful experience 2 months ago. I want to get that back. Again, so it's just like, what's happening now? I'm in my house. So don't try to recreate. Right? And you might, by chance and by luck and by happenstance, have that. But don't try to, don't strive for that. You'll be very frustrated.
So we talked about this a little bit last time in our group, but how after my first retreat, I started getting a Dharma seed and just like, I was pretty random with it.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm wondering if you have any recommendations, either teachers, if both like gratitude or metta or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll answer that. You have a similar question? Can we tie them together?
I got a recommendation.
Oh, okay, cool.
So the 10% Happier app.
Yep.
It's like a giant catalog of Joseph Goldstein, Sharon Salzberg, Alexis Santos, like any Vipassana.
Yeah, that's a pretty well, like, vetted. Dharma Seed's great, but Dharma Seed, they just put every Dharma talk from all, so it's like, it's kind of like a nightmare. It's like trying to go to the, it's like going to Home Depot to pick out paint for the living room. You just leave with no paint. You're like, fuck this. You know, like what happened to vanilla chocolate and strawberry? Those days are over. And yes, you probably, the experience you have in Dharma Seed. And you're like, you know, so you're right. 10% Happier is good because it's also, it is secular, but it's rooted in this tradition. Dan Harris does a pretty good job. That's pretty solid stuff, actually. And I think you don't have to pay for that app. I'm not sure.
You do if you're going to use it for meditation.
Yeah,
for
and it's probably worth it. You know, what do they say in tattoo world? Cheap isn't good, good isn't cheap. You get what you pay for.
I think it's like $50 a year. It's not.
Yeah, it's not much. You know, it's probably worth it. It's probably, and so part of it is like, you know, giving Donna to teachers or supporting these apps. There is an investment here. You know, if you want to invest in quality, if you want to, you know, if you want to comb through the 400,000 talks on Dharma Seed, you can do that free of charge, or you can spend $50 a year and get some vetted meditations that are well labeled and so forth. So that's a good one. And the other thing to say about that is I'm hesitant because it's a little bit of a choose your own adventure book. You will notice if you listen to these talks and you start to listen to talks to me, I'm a borderline heretic. Most people in the inside Dharma world would not teach and agree with a lot of the stuff that I have to say. Right? And I'm also not interested at all in you agreeing with my interpretation of the practice at all. Right? I don't believe and think that I have the right, correct view on these things. I just have a view on these things. But I have been at it for a little while. And so I am a little bit, I'm very much a historian now. I'm really, everything I teach comes from the early Pali texts. And so if you're interested in that kind of interpretation, then you're looking for people like Stephen Batchelor. What's that?
Or like you.
Or me, yeah, of course, right? Stephen Batchelor, John Peacock. He's also on Dharma Seed. Stephen Batchelor, John Peacock. And there's an organization called Bodhi College Online. Bodhi College Online, they're mostly in Europe. It's Stephen Batchelor, Kinchino Weber, Christina Feldman, who has a book on the Brahma Viharas called Boundless Heart. Those are the teachers that I feel most resonant towards because A, they've been at it. They've been sitting and practicing for 50 years. So I just kind of trust that. And they also have a very great academic, educated interpretation of looking at these Pali texts the way that we would in our culture, through the lens of academia, not through tradition, not believing blindly what the tradition says, but saying, well, actually, let's see what's in those texts, and let's have an open dialogue conversation like you would at any learning environment in America. If you take an English class, you know, and the professor is talking about the poetry of Robert Frost, you don't necessarily need to agree with his interpretation of the meaning of those poems. So there should be an open dialogue and to really trust that you're an intelligent person who's capable of critical thought, right? And I didn't do that for so long, and I'll tell you, it's not pleasant when you feel like you have to ascribe to the authority of a teacher or somebody's interpretation of these texts, which is a very religious posture. It's not really appropriate to go to church on Sunday and start, you know, having a dialogue with the minister about the interpretation of the Christian texts. And same thing with here. It's sort of not appropriate. But also at the same time, we don't want to hand over our authority to somebody else. Joseph Goldstein is great. Jack Kornfield's great. Tara Brach. There's kind of the low-hanging fruit people of the tradition who mostly I don't have anything bad to say about them. They're all really well tried and true. But then there's the second, third generation teachers where you kind of start, you know, like you said, I wouldn't just go to Dharma Seed and start looking for something. I would find a teacher like Joseph Goldstein's probably got 2,000 talks on Dharma Seed. Like, that will take a while to get through those 2,000 talks. Right? So what, and Joseph Goldstein taught me this many years ago, it's, if you're going to dig a hole, it's better to dig one hole deep than rather than dig 25 shallow holes. And that's that spiritual tourism that we see, that spiritual market where we're like, oh, a little bit of this. You know, you kind of don't want to do that, actually. You want to find something that you want to really actually learn to follow your own nose, and you want to be able to sniff it out and be able to say, well, this seems pretty good. This Goldstein guy seems pretty good. Let's read his book. Let's listen to 15 or 20 of his talks. Let's listen, finding a talk that you like. I've been listening, there's Dharma talks I've listened to 100 times. Right? So it's like, really, when we start to, when you feel a resonance with what's being offered, you should really, really revisit over and over and over again. Yeah.
Would you please remind us of the book that you recommended to our group?
When Awareness Becomes Natural, Sayadaw Tejaniya. He's also great. Alex Santos is a Tejaniya student. You know, and so, yeah.
So that was going to be my question. Like, for somebody who's never heard of Early Discourses before,
yeah,
this weekend, like, is there a book you'd recommend?
You know, if you really want to read Pali Discourses, it's very challenging to read. But one place to start is Bhikkhu Bodhi, who's kind of the most prolific writer, translator of the Pali Canon, has this little, I think they actually have it in the library down there if you want to look at it. It's a purple book. It says, it's called In the Buddha's Words. And it's kind of Bhikkhu Bodhi's, it's, you know, it's 300 pages, it's not too bad. But it's kind of his greatest hits. Like, you know what I mean? It's like Apple Essentials Beastie Boys, you know what I mean? It's got all the good shit in there. You know, how many of you download the Essentials, right? It's that. And it's like kind of the greatest hits. And he also, what he does is at the beginning of each section, he tells you what's in the section, why he put it in the section, ways to think about the section. It's kind of the best introduction. It's also not light material, but if you want to kind of start going down that road, that's really the best book to start with, because Bhikkhu Bodhi's pretty well respected, and he's a Pali translator. He's also a monk. He's also born in Brooklyn. He's an English thinking, grew up in our culture. So that book is a great place to start. And then he has others, but you know, that you might look at that book for a year. You know, and then you might find talks. So you might look at a sutta and say, okay, this sutta I like called The Noble Quest. Oh, that was an interesting sutta. Then I might go to Dharma Seed and type in that sutta and see if anything everybody else. So it's kind of you have to approach this stuff like a researcher. You know, if there's topics you like, oh, the Four Noble Truths, that sounds interesting. What does Goldstein say about the Four Noble Truths? What does Stephen Batchelor say? What does Christina Feldman say? So it's better to search it more topical. Right? Yeah, Beth?
Is that on the list on your...
It might be.
Okay, because, I mean, that's been helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you said, maybe take a year, because I was reading everything.
Yeah, yeah. Slow down, man. Slow down. And if you start reading a book and it's not useful or interesting, chuck it. Don't force it, you know what I mean? Trust that what you're interested in is valuable. And I learned that years ago from Stephen Basser, of really like learning. And I work with him. I've been working with him for about 15 years. Follow your nose if you understand what I mean by that. That seems good. And at least you're following what you're interested in, which is actually interesting and more enjoyable. Yeah, please.
What's the best way to access your talks?
So, okay, good, I'll get there. Okay. I'm at davesmithdharma.com. And anything that I ever do or have done will somehow be linked off that site. davesmithdharma.com, I have a podcast that has 250 talks on it. These talks will end up on that podcast, so I won't send you a link or I won't send you the talks. But I have a service that... when I upload a podcast, it goes on to Spotify, it goes on to iTunes, it goes on to Podbean. You know, if you listen to podcasts, I'm probably pretty certain that whatever service provider you use, Dave Smith Dharma, a search of Dave Smith Dharma will bring those talks right up. And it will say Metta Vipassana, you know, it'll say what the retreat was. There's a little kind of, what do they call them? Notes, podcast notes. So it'll be pretty obvious.
Including this talk too?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm easy to find. And also on my website, you'll find my services that I provide. I have a range of online classes you can take. I have a secular mindfulness class called Mindfulness for Everyone. I have a weekly online class, a Zoom class that you can subscribe to. That's every Wednesday night at 6 Mountain Time, which is an hour and 15 minutes. It's a Dharma talk, a meditation and a discussion. There's maybe 50 or 60 people in it. That happens every week. And then I also have a mentoring program for people who want to work with me more closely. Really, my interest is, to be honest with you, I have no interest at all in becoming a famous Buddhist teacher. I really don't. I look at that. I was a musician before. I've been there. I've done that. I have no interest in that. But I do want to be popular.